welcome to another episode of Sacred Cinema here on 2XX 98.3 FM People Powered Radio. I'm your host, Jimmy Bernasconi, for the next half hour, and this week's episode is entitled Lost Love. We've talked about love and romantic films on the show many, many times, and you may be thinking, oh, not more love, not more romance, intimacy, relationships. Well, that's what the people want. I think we all love a good romance. This week we're talking about films that depict a romantic relationship, and I think actually all three of the films you could class as love triangle films, but I think the whole concept of a love triangle is quite a big one. I think we should do that specifically, do a specific love triangle episode itself. But this is situations in which you have a protagonist who had a shot with someone, could have taken it to the next level with someone, maybe in their past or for whatever reason during their current situation, they can't do it, they don't know what to do, they go back to the person that they're actually with. And essentially, the common feeling through all of these films is sort of a sliding doors contemplation. We're ironically not actually going to talk about the film Sliding Doors, but a kind of what happens. What would have happened? What would my life have been like? Would I have been happier if I was with that person rather than this person? And this is a very classic dilemma to talk about in a monogamous society, and people often talk about, you know, is there such a thing as one person's true love, and there's someone out there for everyone, and everyone finds their counterpoint in another, and then they live happily ever after, and things like that. And I think sometimes when we have these conversations, people very often fall into a kind of reductionist, very pithy, almost like a kind of ignorant or naive generalization of, well, you know, you stay true to your heart, no one's perfect, it wouldn't have worked out with that person. I suppose we could have done films like the Before trilogy this week, the Regina Linklater films, which we all love, and sort of about, you know, no love is pure perfection. We're not actually going to fall into that old territory so much this week. We're kind of actually going to really steer into the grittiness of this one and really try and get comfortable with some of the more uncomfortable aspects of this conversation. Because I just think that, you know, in conversations around this stuff, we don't really talk about it enough. And I think what's so bold and brave about so many of the films, or the three films we're going to be talking about, is that they do kind of steer into that element of, and that's kind of what I've liked to sort of tie them together and hopefully reconcile some of these things so we can still stay true to our feelings and the things we feel maybe a bit guilty or shameful about, but also not walk away from today's conversation feeling like terrible people. But the first one we're going to talk about is David Lean's 1945 film Brief Encounter. We're then going to chat about Celine Song's new film, which was shown at the Sydney Film Festival. It's just come out in Australian cinemas proper. That's Past Lives from this year, 2023. And then we're going to finish off with Michael Curtiz's 1942. I mean, we're talking about romantic films. Are we talking about Casablanca? I think it's an obvious one to talk about this week. So three pretty big films, all very, you know, related to one another in various ways. We could have done one of those weeks where we break it down by theme and sort of talk about how each film does that. I thought it'd be better to, I think there is a bit of progression through some of these films that I wanted to touch on. So we're going to do it sort of in a particular order, but so many common themes here, and I would love to hear from you. If you had any further thoughts on this, you can email me at contact@jimmybernasconi.com. But let's kick things off now with Mr. David Lean's 1945 film Brief Encounter. So this one is, of course, based off the play by Noel Coward. But if you haven't seen this one, it's about a middle-aged woman living in England who is living a very conventional life as a mother for a family of two children. She's happily married. And in her journeys into town every Thursday, she comes across this very charming general practitioner. And over the course of 4 weeks, they develop this relationship by, you know, going to get lunch together, going to the movies together, catching the train together, and they fall madly in love, only for a matter of, I think it's like 4 weeks or something like that. And what I want to focus on, I mean, there's so much to talk about with this film, there's so much to love about it. This is a film that, when I was watching it, I was like, there's so much about this that still holds up as a, you know, sometimes when you watch an older film, the camera's a bit static, it doesn't jump around as much, the techniques are narrow in terms of the sort of the sheer amount of them. This film uses voiceover, it uses music, it uses lighting, every aspect of filmmaking is done to the elite degree. It's obviously a Criterion, you know, favorite, but this is definitely a film you would show someone who's not big on old movies. To, like, you can't not connect with, particularly the dialogue, which we're going to get into a little bit more detail. The voiceover, which we're going to get into a lot more detail. But Rachmaninoff's Piano Concerto number 2. I mean, you can't be a bad film if you're using that as your score throughout. But the main thing I do want to talk about is the universality of the theme that's explored, and the way that universality and the universal experience of this theme of lost love, of love triangles, of what if I was with this person, how that is quite a universal thing. I think that's firstly done through the characterization, where our protagonists are kind of conventional, good and ordinary people. And so much of that is carried in the voiceover, and I can't put it better than when she says a lot of the voiceover that's spoken is, it's the kind of predictability that's good. It's not that it's cliche. It's that your mind, when you're empathizing with this character, is going the same way. I mean, it's a bit subjective, I suppose, but I can't help but think when you watch this movie that. You're anticipating what she's about to say next, and there's a particular line of dialogue I'm actually going to focus on in just a second, but there's something wonderful when you watch a film or a play when you feel like that they're in your head. It's not that they're presenting something new to you, but there's a sense of comfort, despite the fact that what this character is doing is a bad thing, capital B, bad thing to do. You can't help but think that those are the exact thoughts that you would have at the time. So it's a great deal of relatability, but we're seeing the very bad in the ordinary, right? We're seeing someone just that you would see, you know, your next door neighbor or even yourself, doing something very bad. And I think that's important to touch on in a radio show about sort of film and film history, because around this time we've got while you wouldn't call this an out and out noir film, it's got noirish elements. And I think a big part of 1940s filmmaking was about trying to uncover literally the shadows that haunt all of us, that haunt the ordinary people. We're in the midst of a war. We've just had a major Second World War. We know that the human beings, all of us through all walks of life, are capable of very bad things. And I think this is a film this we're going to talk about in terms of relationships, but it's more, I think more broadly, it's been spoken a lot about in terms of a film about shame and a film about guilt and what it means for the everyday person to deal with a deep, deep sense of guilt and wanting to find someone to whom they can confess, finding a completely almost ambivalent or neutral or numb, or just as someone who's not a non-judgmental kind of almost like a religious-like figure, like a priest or someone who they can vent to. And this film kind of becomes, and the voice of it particularly, kind of becomes that neutral, non-judgmental soundboard for our protagonist in this film, because it feels like it's not only a universal feeling to feel a sense of guilt about this specific act, but to feel a sense of guilt in general and to wish that we can confess to someone when we can't. So we've got this universal dilemma that's particularly depicted through the characterization, but can we actually hone in specifically on what the dilemma actually is? Like, what is this precise dilemma? And I think this is where the title has some significance here. The film is called Brief Encounter. It's not simply a story about how bad does one feel when they cheat on their husband. It's really important that this love story only takes place over a matter of 4 weeks, or whatever it is. I think it's 4 weeks. And each encounter is for the afternoon. There's no big weekends away. There's a couple of scenes where they drive off to like the countryside, but it's England, so it's only an hour or so out of the way. There's no my week with Marilyn kind of romantic sequences. They're always going home to their spouses by the end of it all, for the most part. So I think a huge element of this film, which is going to probably carry on through all three of the films we're going to talk about today, is the potency of brief love. In other words, new love, love that has just occurred and is just about to end. These nuggets of love, short, small portions of love, and how potent love is when its temporality, its lifespan is reduced to a very small, compact amount, right? So it's not just that the love is new, but what love feels like while it's new. In other words, what love feels like before it goes stale. And getting back to this idea about universality, I think this is something that every human being can relate to. There is a different feeling that we feel in our heart when we have a new love, when love is first blossoming, when our brain chemicals go crazy, when we've just met someone that we've never met before, and we have that feeling like, I've never felt like this with another person before. This person blows everyone out of the water. And then, as we all know, sort of as time passes, the initial sheen of love inevitably does fall away. And as you're watching this film, you can't help but wonder this question: well, is it just simply that it's new love that makes this relationship, you know, the love that holds this relationship together so potent? Is this something that the protagonist would have actually felt with their actual real partners when they first met them? And, you know, following that logic, if they did go together, would that love also go stale? Like, I think of a show like Mad Men, which has this kind of theme of every time, you know, the guys sort of meet a new young girl, you sort of see it eventually, you know, the sheen eventually, you know, rubs away, and then the relationships are just as bad as the ones that they just got out of to be with the younger people. Like, this is a very, it's almost like a cyclical, inevitable, perpetual human dilemma of love going stale no matter how potent it is to begin with. And I mentioned the Before trilogy, and I think that's something that's certainly very much dealt with, and in sort of acknowledging that, I think this film, that there's a particular line of dialogue which I just think rings so true, is when she's reflecting on that feeling of lost love, as she knows it's the last time that she's going to see the doctor, and she says that she wants to remember the feeling because she knows that one day it will go away. It's almost like she knows that the love would have actually been as doomed as her love with her actual husband. And there's almost like an addiction to brief encounters themselves, because we know that we never actually live to see it go stale. And there's a tragedy in losing the feeling itself. Once the person goes, it's not because, and we're not still with that person and blaming it on them, that person still, you know, it's not that that person has let us down. They've just disappeared from our attention. They're no longer there. I guess this sort of does bring into this question, though. Does love always go stale? Did we make too bold an assumption there? Like, if what, you know, especially like, what if we don't do the wrong thing, right? Like, what if we keep these people in our lives? What if we keep things above board? Does it go stale? Well, before we answer that question, or at least attempt to, just remind you, I listen to Sacred Cinema here on 2XX FM, 98.3 FM, the People Powered radio station. Be sure to stay tuned to our station, more quality radio programming coming up on 2XX, and also jump onto our website to consider subscribing to the station or sponsoring this show or any of our shows that you enjoy here on People Powered Radio. But moving on now to Past Life by Celine Song, and this one, very similar situation, I suppose, in a way. There's a whole other element here of cultural clash and crossing cultures, where our protagonist is Korean born, moves to America, and has an old friend from Korea who they probably would have ended up being boyfriend and girlfriend if they'd stayed in the same country, probably. But she moves to America and meets an American guy, marries him. And there's sort of talk of whether it was, you know, for a green card or not. And the whole, there's this whole concept of inyun as well, which is a Korean concept of, you know, if you bump into someone in the street or if you have some kind of interaction, that means that you have a lot of inyun with them, like in a past life. You know, it brings into question like reincarnation and that sort of thing. That means, and it's this question around, you know, obviously this is a constant exploration in sort of a metaphysical sense, not just a literal sense of, having multiple different iterations of one life, of one singular, you know, and meeting different people in different lives and having relationships with them to varying intensities and that sort of thing. So we have this love triangle where our protagonist is wondering, you know, what would have happened if I was with the Korean guy versus the American guy. But rather than just saying this is the same as the brief encounter situation, just, you know, but being a cross-border encounter, I think that this is a film that sort of takes that universal dilemma we talked about with Brief Encounter, but steelmans it and makes it even more difficult for us to have to come to terms with. So when you watch a movie like Brief Encounter, you think, oh God, isn't that awful to feel so guilty about that, even though it kind of feels kind of natural, but it is really a terrible thing to do. I think in past lives, the situation is even worse. Like, you feel even worse for our protagonist. I guess there's kind of like two main reasons, let's say. The first is that it's not just that, you know, because at least if you have the one brief encounter, you can say, well, look, it would have gone stale. In this film, we have sort of multiple brief encounters. There's obviously when they're children, and then when they grow up, there's some Skyping going on. And then there's the main sort of focus of the film is when they meet up again in America, while the Korean guy comes to America to go on holiday, but essentially, you know, he's coming to see our girl there. And so we can't simply in this film say, well, you know, it wouldn't have worked as time went by, would have sort of moved on and that sort of thing, because we see sort of every time they see each other again, it's still there. The potency is still there. And one could even say, and I'm conscious this film's only just come out, so I'm really being careful not to give too much away here, but you could say that the potency of the love actually increases with each encounter. It doesn't get weakened. Actually, it's almost like every time you say goodbye, it strengthens and comes back stronger. And then you say goodbye again, and that actually strengthens it and comes back stronger the next time. But I think this film makes a really strong point, a really important point about how the heartache, the pain that we feel about all this sort of stuff, it seems to worsen the more we resist temptation. It's almost like a tap, and it's almost like it gets worse if we don't let a bit come out. So in Brief Encounter, there's a bit of kissing, there's a bit of cheating going on, and that's bad, but maybe it means that, you know, the forbidden fruit's been bitten out, and it's no longer that sweet because it's been tasted and that sort of thing. But in this one, there isn't, I'm trying to give it away, but there isn't too much transgression. They actually keep things above board. They do the right thing, and also to worsen it, there's an exploration here of the husband character. You know, the equivalent husband character in Brief Encounter is kind of like he's a bit vanilla, he's a bit boring. He does the crossword, but he's not that bad. In Past Lives, we've got the situation where the husband is kind of like, I'm not going to say he's a bad guy, right? If you haven't seen the film, it's played by John Magaro, who you'd know from things like First Cow and stuff like that. So he's like a kind of innocent, like quirky, nerdy guy, but like he's playing his video games and he can't speak. He can't speak Nora's language. She's the protagonist, by the way. There was this almost a sense of insufficiency, or, you know, because there's the green and card element there, it's like you really can see Nora leaving him. Like, she is better than him on a lot of fronts. And the guy from Korea, Jung Hae-sung, he's like kind of much more handsome, taller, he's a real professional type guy. Like, they really make it very clear that he would be almost like a better option. So it's all going against Nora in this film. And so sort of, I guess without, I don't want to give too much away here, but we do sort of see that this constant compounding of resistance and sticking with the guy that you can't help but think is like not really the guy that she should be with. We do see this overwhelming toll, right? That has the overwhelming burden. This is a massive toll on Nora, and it sort of comes out in an almost explosive way at a certain point in the film. And speaking of sort of the metaphysical elements that are explored in the film, the questions like things around the past, the concept of the Korean concept of the past life, the Inuit, and all that sort of thing. We said something tragic about these sort of situations where almost the best we can do is perhaps ponder in almost supernatural ways, is to lie to ourselves, to engage in delusion voluntarily. About how maybe, you know, there was another time in another dimension, in another universe, where things could have worked out, and not to sidetrack today's show too much, but it's almost like a film that shows why religion and spirituality become necessities, because the world is so cruel, because interpersonal relationships do bring out these tragic moments of heartache, And the best we can do is come up, and this is what I was trying to say at the beginning of the show, the best we can do is come up with some kind of pseudo-spiritual religious idea. And this isn't to speak down the, you know, the Korean traditions, but I don't think these people actually believe in Inu, but they have to pretend that they believe in it just to bear how horrible the feeling is to know that, like, we're all standing here, we all kind of know that these two would have been better than these two, but because of circumstance. So we've kind of got to a point in today's show where things are pretty depressing. Like, we've got a situation where everybody kind of doesn't, like, everyone does kind of think about, you know, what could have been if I was with somebody else, that sort of thing. And maybe the best we can do is just to sort of say it was just a delusion or something like that. And so it's just sort of buying some kind of delusion. Is there a way that we can perhaps rectify all this? Well, I think there actually is a film that sort of hits a huge home run in this ballpark. And I would put this film in that category up there with your Citizen Kanes, your Networks, right? This is one of those biblical level films which is covering a lot of ground. And the film is, of course, Michael Curtiz's film from 1942. That's Casablanca. And I think everyone listening to the show would have knows about Humphrey Bogart and Ingrid Bergman and what this film is all about and how it's kind of like the stencil for so many romantic films that have come since. But it's essentially, it's set in the Moroccan town of Casablanca, and Humphrey Bogart runs a bar there, and he's this kind of cool, swift guy, and he's very, you know, handsome, suave guy, and Ingrid Bergman's with Victor Laszlo, who's this war hero, essentially. He's, like, running the French resistance, or see some journalist that's, like, winning the war for the Allies, and she's his squeeze, but her and Humphrey have Paris, don't they? And they have that past together, and they know that their love is full on, and they know that it's wrong, but they're meant to be together like two beautiful Hollywood stars should be. But what's different about this film when we compare it to Brief Encounter that comes only a couple of years later and a film like Past Lives? Well, I think that the big thing about this film, which makes it such a behemoth in film history and in just the history of Western narrative as well, is that it's not just a love story, it's a war story. And the whole thing is set against this backdrop of the Second World War. And we've talked about the Second World War a lot on this show. And I think the reason why is because in 2023, while the world may go haywire in a matter of moments, the worst thing that's ever happened to us is World War II still, I think you could say. You know, atomic bombs, millions of deaths, Hitler, the Holocaust, right? Terrible things happened from 1939 through to 1945. And this is made in the middle of that. It steers into it. It's a huge plot point. And so the question is really, what does all this matter? If you think about lost love, what does that matter when you have the atrocities of a world war, including a Holocaust, a genocide? And also, if we sort of play into that, we've talked about this a lot. We talked about the movie Mr. Nobody a couple of weeks ago, and we've kind of had this recurring theme of every action we make is always inevitably tied to something greater. There's always ripple effects that come from every action, and every act that we perform has ripple effects. So when we talk about these interpersonal issues, is there a way that we can navigate them through a broader, more global, more cosmic perspective when we see that they actually have impacts on the broader world at large and on the lives, on the mortality, on the lifespans of the people that, not even the people that we know and love, but strangers, right? And this is why Victor Laszlo's character, the character of Victor Laszlo, is so important, because it's important, and Humphrey Bogart, who's otherwise this stoic, you know, selfish guy who keeps to himself, and, you know, there's murmurs that maybe once upon a time he was a war hero himself, and actually he does want to do good. We realize that the character of Victor Laszlo is key to these stories, because we have to, and that goes for all of the kind of the left out lovers in all three of these films. How would the world be different if they didn't get what they needed to do the job that they need to do? And I think this is all very well summed up in a quote in the ending of this film, which is a fantastic ending, one of the best endings of any film, is when Humphrey Bogart says to Ingrid Bergman, when he's trying to explain to her why it makes sense for her to go off with Victor Laszlo at the end of the film, what he says to her is, look, I'm no good at being noble, but it doesn't take much to see that the problems of three little people don't matter, don't amount to a hill of beans in this crazy world. And so I think that another way of putting that is, love triangles and lost love and could it, would it, should have been with this person, should I have gone with them, whatever. There's always a greater good. And if you ever want to know who you should be with, maybe it's about thinking, well, what is that greater good? And is being with this person going to get me closer to fulfilling the greater good or further away? Whose lives are at stake here? Is this relationship going to better the world or is it going to worsen the world? You might think, you know, my relationship with my spouse doesn't save lives. It does. It does. The degree to which you motivate someone, the degree to which you inspire someone to do more with their life, to dedicate their life to something. And if we call back to a brief encounter, the whole reason why that relationship doesn't work out is because the doctor character, the GP, is going off to Africa to save the little kids. And if they were to see out their relationship, that wouldn't have happened. Lives would have been lost. And this actually becomes a recurring theme in all of these films when you start unpacking it, that there's always a greater good element to these stories. And that I think what we can peel away is that we can get some direction and we actually can get some closure and feel a lot better about the choices that we make and the people we end up with when we can look at it through that lens. So let's try and bring everything together this week. When we talked about Brief Encounter, we talked about that as bad as it might sound, as bad as it seems, let's not deny the universality of this problem. We all have some experience on some level of wondering, well, what would have happened if I was with that person versus the person I'm with? Or is the person I'm with the right person? I mean, I love them so much, but what about this person? What about that person? What about that person I met 20 years ago? What about that person I, you know, kissed on the cheek in preschool? Would have worked? It's a universal thing, whether we like it or like it. It's disgusting as it makes us feel. It's something we can all relate to. And I'll go as far as to say that in past lives we get to this point where even the more we deny that, the more we want to act like we're better than that and that's something that we aren't affected by, that can actually increase the pain of it. That can actually compound the pain of it and it can draw us almost to a state of delusion. I don't mean that in an insensitive way, but it does lead us to almost like having to find spirituality, having to find religion to combat these truths of life that perhaps bloom from our instincts and these vestiges of our animalistic instincts to constantly procreate. Almost like a sense of imprisoning dogma. Perhaps instead of that, if we want to navigate this and feel a greater sense of closure, look, we might not, you know, we might every now and then actually have to lose someone that we love or that we could have loved very deeply, right? I understand that that's something that might happen. But when we give ourselves that compass to point to, that greater good, we give ourselves a bit more of an orientation. Well, perhaps when we think about it like that, well, perhaps it's just as important, rather than wallowing in lost love, perhaps it's just as important to consider what we all could have lost had we loved that person any longer. That's all we've got time for this week on Sacred Cinema. I've been your host, Jimmy Bernasconi, here on 2XX98.3 FM, People Powered Radio. Thank you so much for tuning in. And stay tuned for more quality radio programming here on 2XX and also jump onto our website to consider subscribing to the station or sponsoring any of our shows. That would all be very much appreciated. I would love you for that. And that love wouldn't be lost. But until next week, thanks so much for tuning in. And we'll see you again very soon.